Mr. Gormley, Reel 5. We're talking about training with hand grenades. It's a dangerous job. Was anyone, any accidents with them?
Always. There's always something happens unexpected, but where you are. I only remember once, this was on the camp, and unfortunately, I wasn't anywhere near it when it happened. And this lad had dropped the grenade, and it was alive. And it was having this sergeant. This sergeant, I wish I could remember his name now, he's better to come to me. This sergeant threw him to one side and fell on him. And he was killed. I always remember that. I didn't actually see it, but it was a tall on the top of the camp. Yeah. But I think it was one of these shots I'd done it like, you know.
Did you have any sport in the camp?
Oh, yes. The ball was always being kicked about. Oh, yes, plenty. Nothing like cricket, anything like that, you know, but any ball sport, like that's a good use, you know, like kicking a ball or rugby, you know, always plenty to go on.
Intercompany and inter-battalion games, did they go on in the camp?
Yes, you always had these towards the end of the camp, they'd have a competition, like all the good runners and that, and they would have the races between each section, not each section, mate, but they would put a team out, each would put their own team out, you know, the East Yorks and West Yorks or whatever. They would all put their own teams out and I was in the boxing team. I never thought that I'd never let them go out and box it up. it was great. It was really. To me, that was one of the, I think, even in retrospect, like, one of the most wonderful times I had, that fortnight's camp, I had at Catholic camp.
So you'd have the fortnight's camp, as you say.
Yeah.
Now, as a working man, did you get an annual holiday at this time with your works?
I think we did.
The point I'm going to make is, of course, that for some men, or many men, this fortnight at camp would be the only break they would get in their working lives,
yes,
or a major break.
Yes, but I think, looking back in retrospect, I'm sure that the ICI introduced a one-week holiday. I'm pretty certain of that. It's a dim memory.
And you still got your 1 week's holidays as well as the camp?
I'm sure I did, because I'd had that, then I could have my 1 week's holiday and get my fortnight's training camp, which was, as I say, encouraged by the management. And I think it was Lord Montague or somebody like that was in charge of the, what is it, you or Morris or somebody was in charge of the ICI at the time. And he encouraged this, you see, and so I'm sure that we had 1 week's holiday.
Not many companies had at that time,
I think that was the first person or the first people I knew that actually gave you the week's holiday with pay.
And you got a bounty for the camp, didn't you, for the fortnight's camp?
Oh, yes, you had an extra bounty for being on the camp. Right?
Do you recall how much that was at that time?
Oh, it was about £2, I think, which was a lot of money, wasn't it? It was like a pound a week, actually. You had your pay for being in the camp, which was 14 shillings.
That was the normal, regular army pay?
The regular army pay, you had your 14 shillings for that. Then you got the bounty on top of that, and I'm sure it was either £2.50 bounty for being on the camp, so it's really well in the pocket, like when he came back, you know, when the college came in those years.
Now, you said that you came back from that camp, and you weren't in the Durhams long after that, you went as a regular soldier, is that right?
Only a matter of about a fortnight or something like that, or a few months at the most.
So what date are we talking about when you went regular?
1935, August. back end of August, I remember my father's birthday, 26th of August.
What decided you to go to leave ICI and go in as a regular soldier?
Well, I thought after being on this camp, I just thought to myself, thinking over, because I'd only been back about less than a month, I think. About a month. And I'd been thinking it all, and I thought, there's more things in life than working as a plaster. I'm not that I was there, devil may care, who done it or whatnot, I went there. I thought, well, there's got to be more things in life than me plastering, because and I just made my mind up then that I'm going to be a gunner. Now, my father had always wanted us to be a gunner.
Your father wanted you to go into his regiment?
Yeah.
So he was quite happy about you joining the army?
Oh, yes. He was more pleased about me joining the artillery than it would have been stopping the drums, I think.
What was the process for joining the regular army?
Well, I cycled over to Middlesbrough, and I went into the recruiting office there, and which I knew very well, by the way, because I used to train for boxing in Middlesbrough, in Bloom's Gymnasium, up above the high school, Harry Cratchit, and all that lot. I wasn't supposed to, like, because I was amateur, but I used to train with all the professionals. And anyway, that's beside the point. I cycled over to Middlesbrough. I knew where the recruiting office was, of course, and I walked in and I said, I'd like to join the regulars, right, you know. He said, I see you DLI. I said, aye, but I want to join the gunners. I said, I want to join the gunners. No, we've got no vacancies for gunners. He said, you can join the DLI. I said, I'm not joining the DLI. I said, my father was a gunner, and his father was a gunner, I said, and I'm going to be a gunner. Sorry, he said, there's no vacancies. He said, no vacancies here for gunners. I said, right, brother. I said, I can change my mind the same as you can change yours. I said, I've changed my mind now, ta-da. And I walked out. I hadn't gone 10 steps down the street. He come charging up me. I found a vacancy for you. He said, I found a vacancy for you. I said, as long as it's a gunner. I said, I don't mind. So I went back in with him, and he made this bonnet and everything out. Like, and he said, you're going to Woolwich. And he signed me on as a driver, Royal Artillery.
Did you have to have a medical before at this time?
Not then.
Not then?
Not then, no.
So this is for the Royal Artillery?
For the Royal Artillery, yeah. I joined the... So I went home, got my gear together, told my father where I was going. He said, you can't do that. He said, you're showing me a time. I said, it's all pretty late. I said, I'm signed up. I said, you can't do nothing about it. He said, I can stop you. I said, you can't. I said, this is the way you stop me. I said, I'm up.
How old were you at this point?
18. Just turned 18. Fortnight after 18. Sometime 18.
Did you get the King's shilling when you were in the recruiting office?
Nobody ever offered me a shilling. I can't ever remember who offered me a one. Like, if he did, I would have took his hand off. But anyway, as I say, I'll just pack my gear together, like when my dad went and took us up to Scotland and I got the train from Scotland. Well, that was like going to the back end of the world for me. The furthest I'd ever been in my life was York, but I'd gone camping one day, or Saltburn, which was another county near there. And I'd never been any further than York, which was on a bicycle either, so I hadn't seen any or done any. And so I set off for Woolwich. I thought I was never ever going to get there. It seemed an awful long way, you know. I went down to Woolwich, and then I had to make my way from Woolwich over to, from
London.
Across London to Woolwich. Well, I took them to Whaley and they showed us how to get there, and I got the tube across, and then I got up and I walked into the depot, and I didn't know what the hell was going on.
How did they receive you when you marched up to that guard room or whatever it was? What was the reception like? What did they do?
Well, they just accepted it, like, you know, it was just like, I've probably been homeless code in the same day, really, like, you know, oh, yes, we report to so and so, like, where is it up there, you know, and sent it up to this place, and then I was sent in, it was all horse drawn in those days, and the stables were all underneath. And the billets were all on the top, all the stables were underneath. So I was sent to see this fella, and the bombardier. Bombardier Saviour. And I was sent to him, and he took me up and showed me the billet like this. But yeah, like, you know, this is where you're going to stop, like, and a bed was there with proper old army bed. What the hell's that like? What the hell's going to sleep on that? Because it was folded up, like, you know. So, what the hell
are we going to sleep on? Well, were you on your own at this time?
Oh, yeah.
Still on your own.
I was the first one in out of the... They were just forming a squad from somewhere, like, you know. So, anyway, he came in, he says, right, go on, I'll take you up the coat outside. He was up the coat outside, and then I've got a meal, like, in London. So I got a meal there, like, and that was it, like, and then I just sat around. I was still in my shoey clothes, and I just sat around until... then there was another one or two come in later in the afternoon. And about a week, we're still in Suez. About a week, right afternoon.
So you're just basically doing nothing except for that first week?
Nothing.
Until the squad came together?
We got the squad together. And
how many people would that be in the squad? Did it have a name, the squad? Did it have a special name? Or?
No, it had the name, no, but I can't even remember. It was just like X section or B section or whatever. this Saviour, it was Saviour. He was in charge. He was.
So that hadn't bothered you much for that week at all?
No, we're getting the grub. Took us up to the grub and we just had to walk up to the place and get that old grub for the first week. By that time, they'd got the whole squad together.
You hadn't had a medical in that time, had you?
No, nothing at all. Just that week, we're just following back and forward, you know, up and down the cookhouse, going to the canteen, things like that. Not that way, I didn't think I spent it, things like that. So, anyway, they got the squad together by the end of the week. It was only then that they took us, and the first thing they did, they took us all down to barbers. And they had a haircut. And you never had a haircut, you had one cut, right? They were all coming here. Well, I wasn't too bad because I'd always, funny, I'd always kept me weaving and shit, like, you know, because we're boxing and that. And I was one of the part of my hair down the middle, you know, because I had hair then. And it was part of my hair down the middle. So I wasn't too bad, like, when I went in, like, you only took a lot off, except a little bit, little top of my thing.
Little fringe, the front.
There's a little fringe there, no more. That was left about a quarter of an inch up the rep and get off on the top. and there was blokes there who were crying, and he cried, man, I don't know, he just straight up with me and all that, don't they? It broke my heart, he crying. He took my head on there, he took my head on there. And which I thought, man, I could do it. So that was the first thing. So we all had our hair cut to that. Then we all checked the showers, put in the showers, and then they took our clothes off us. They were all parceled up and central.
They must have issued you with your uniform by now.
Pardon?
They must have issued you with your uniform.
No.
Still hadn't got your uniform.
No, the first week we got nothing. Nothing at all. They'd never done a damn thing. All we did was walk back and forward until we got the squad assembled. But once the squad was assembled, that was it. Haircut. Dentist. Full medical. So we went to the dentist. He just looked at you, checked what the needed to be done, then you were seen to hear that, you see. Straight into the medical, you come out the medical.
Was that a good medical, or really looked at you?
Oh, my thorough medical. Oh, yes, yeah, definitely, thorough medical. looking back, it's the only good medical I ever had in a bit, and I was honest until even the day I come out, I never even got one then. Just said, are you all right? I said, aye, he said, just yeah. But anyway, then we went in and we had this full medical, which can be described like...
They looked at everything.
Yeah?
They looked at everything.
They looked at everything. Everything, every mortal thing. Some cold in there, the same cough. That was the only looking at that cough. And I'm like, oh, joke, and I'm like, it's the same 99, 1, 2, 3, 4. and he's gone, oh, God. I always used to say, by the only girl that young woman, you know. And, you know, he did that. So we had this full medical, like, and then we were marched down to the quartermaster stores. We went down to the quartermaster stores and we were issued with denims and all the khaki, tunic, breeches, socks, long johns. Always had to wear long johns to the art of them. Long johns were compulsory because of the chafing on the knees and that. So I never wore long johns before you left. I didn't even know what you'd say. Not until then. We're long johns and the tunic, the breeches, riding whip, a lanyard. Always had a lanyard in their army. Your table book was issued. I had no table book then. Any little table issued. And then, helmet, the hat. I should say a hat. And had the hat issued.
Is that the peaked hat?
Peaked hat, yeah. The peaked hat. And,
the normal packs and webbing?
Spurs. We had spurs issued. Boots. That was where they got the first issue of boots. And then...
Putties, again?
Putties, the long ones. Come right up to the knee. And then you had the breeches with the pads inside here, like for riding. Greatcoat. Yes, lovely big greatcoat. And then you had all your shirts, khaki shirts, really hairy old khaki shirts, and blue hoodies and all. Oh God, you said you look at the and vests and shorts and everything. Trying to think of any of this. I had a riding crop, I had that. And a jackknife, always had a jackknife, jackknife was issued with the thing for picking stones out in the horse's hooves. You're talking about everything nowadays. And a jackknife with a proper thing on the lifting stones out the horse's hooves. And I think I just hear in the lanyard.
Belt, leather belt, was it?
Oh, yes, a leather belt, yes, I was getting a leather belt. We always had it worn with one leather belt in the archery.
Did they give you packs and things as you had in the infantry?
You had your ordinary pack, which you had to use. It had to be packed ready, you know, wasn't it? You had your packs, two pouches, one on each side here, which were carrying small, what they call small gear, small kit. You carried these on here, and we had bandoliers as well. I had a bandolier across here.
Across your chest?
Right, across the chest. We carried a bandolier. Yeah. I think that just about covers all the things we needed in artillery at that time.
Yeah. And when they issued you with that, were you measured, or did they just look at you and hand it over?
Well, yeah, just handed it over. But we took it onto ourselves, right, to get the breeches and that fitted properly.
And was that a regimental tailor that was on the camp?
Yeah, a regimental jersey old tailor in the barracks. And you took them to him, and he sorted it out, like, you know.
Badges and buttons and insignia, what were those?
Yes. Well, we used to have two bombs in here.
That's on your lapel of your collar?
On the lapel. Well, they were on the front of the collar there. He had two bombs here, which was the insignia, the two bombs. He had a cap badge. He had the shoulder epaulets in here as well, like, with artillery on here.
And they were brass?
They were all brass.
With the buttons and everything. So they must have issued you with the button sticks and so on?
You got your button stick. They issued you with your housewife, which contained your button stick, polishing brush, needles, threads, darna, everything that you needed to look after yourself. From darning socks, just to stitch it up and everything. So, you had everything you needed. You had your button stick, which was most important. Like, you needed that necklace, because you had buttons all the way up there. And you showed the epaulets and everything. They're all brass, only cap badge. Still got the cap badge upstairs, but the first cap badge I was issued with, I got it upstairs there. I left it at home. What they call it, they don't even issue them now. It's called the spinning wheel. Yeah. The wheel actually spins on the green thing. That was the first badge I was ever issued with. And I kept it. Even after, because I got other badges like that alone, like the RHA badges and that. But I kept that one.
Eating utensils, what were those? Eating utensils.
Yes, I forgot about those. Eating utensils, they were given to you when you went in. And you got a large pot, an actual pot, which held a pint, a full pint. And it was a large pot, and that was yours. You had a knife, fork, and spoon. And they were also yours. Always got me a number. Everyone had its own number on. And they must have taken this time to put all this together, like, you know. And they were giving me a, and you always marched after the first week when you would get the start. From the day you were starting that, you marched to the dining hall. And you always marched like that. With your hands in your back like that. And your knife, fork and spoon and your mug was all clenched in that, in the back, in the middle of your back like that. And you marched all the way to that. And you marched to the dining hall, you were falling out, and then you went in and got your glove. But you didn't march back. You just made your own way back to your billet, where your billet was, and took up your own billet there. But you're always back. Every way you went, you went in, you carried those few times off every morning, every breakfast time, dinner time, and you could take them. You master that down over. Knife, fork, and spoon, and get that mold cast in your hand, behind your back. That's fundamental when you think of it, you know.
They did an issue with the metal food holders, the tin. And
oh, yes, your mess tin.
Mess tin.
But you didn't have that when you were in bank. When you were in camp, when you were in life, you used ordinary food, you know, like
at the dining hall.
Yeah. You only used that when you were out with the away from the bags. That was when you got your pudding in one, and or your tea in one, or whatever you were getting, and the other in that bag, you know.
So then you would obviously come back to your barracks, which you'd have been allocated. Where did you keep all these uniforms and equipment and things? Where were they kept? In the barrack room?
Well, you had a locker beside your bed. You had a locker beside it. Each bed had a locker beside it. As I say, the beds were actually made to retract and pull back. That was ready for inspection, you see. But the bed was made to pull out, and you had three biscuits, what they call biscuits, with about 3 inches thick, I think, probably about 3 inches thick. And they would, and you lay down, three biscuits on your bed, that took the three to make a bed. And that was your bed, and that's what you lay on. And that was three McCoy coconut fibre. So there was no comfort in it. You were lying there like a rod of iron on that. Like a rod of iron on that top of that. You didn't sink in, you just lay there. You just lay there like that. And of course you had your sheets. Like when you were in Balance, you always had lovely clean white sheets, which were sent to the dormies every week, you know. They were all washed and brought back, and everything was numbered, so you got your own things back every time. And of course, there used to be a lot of food there. You used to get what we call make a bed, and you could make a bed to look as though it was a bed. So the bloke jumped in, and when he jumped in, the bed, he used to collapse under the mat. So that was somebody, his foot all in a little carry and bar, and you're lying there.
This was barrackroom horseplay.
Yeah, it was just horseplay, like, you know. And there was always somebody telling me, somebody was there, we'll make a bed with him when he's out there. And you didn't know, you couldn't tell nothing at it, you know. It wasn't until you actually got in, as soon as you put your weight on the bed, the whole thing just used to collapse like that.
How many beds were there to a room?
30.
Well, the whole 30 of you in one room?
In one room, yeah. 15 on that side, 15 on that side, and then there was a little cubicle at the bottom. And that's where the bombardier slept. He never left you. No, he never left you while you were in that room. Of course, I remember, we'd only been there 3 or 4 days, I think, something like that. We hadn't even formed, you know. And I piled up with this lad from Nottingham, a lad called Woodley. And we'd been larking about this night, way past 10 o'clock, right, you know, we should have been speaking. We'd been larking about this night. Anyway, the next morning, half past five, instead of waiting for the valley, this bombardier comes out of this billet that he's in the end of the road. Rattles every bed. Come on, get out of there. Out, everybody out. Get downstairs, you. Downstairs, everybody. Get downstairs. Gym shoes and shorts only. Get downstairs. Look at downstairs. we were getting down there, right in there, and he started with his petty PT, and we jumped in this way and that way, we didn't know all about PT. Our small jumps begin, we've got to take me small jumps, and then, oh God. And after half an hour, I'm totally shattered, you know. Right, he says, but you hear Valley Sounder, he said, and that's for keeping me awake last night. He said, no, you know what's going to happen if you keep me awake. 10 o'clock, when 10 o'clock goes, when lights out go, you'll go. He says, I want no more. Oh, shut up.